Today's program is brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
Hey, 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 I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you sun in the air.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. We are having a nice little time here. It's a beautiful summer day here in Brooklyn, New York. We're out here at Roberta's. We are recording at Heritage Radio Network, and I have just been chatting a little bit before the show with my guest today, director, producer, and spirit connoisseur, Mr. Steven Soderbergh. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming out here. I know you're in the middle of moving, so thanks for taking the time to come out here and chat.
Well, I'm always happy to go to Brooklyn. It's always good stuff going on.
Yeah, I hear you. That's why I'm here. So, yeah, man, let's get into it. You have, I wouldn't say necessarily a new venture, kind of new to a lot of us, but not to you. It's been quite some years in the making at this point, but you have, you've gotten into the booze world.
Yeah.
Welcome to our world, man.
Yeah, thanks. It's fascinating. I mean, there are ways in which I didn't know what I was getting into when I started, and there are ways in which it's like the business that I'm in, and there are ways in which it's really not. Mm-hmm. But learning a new thing is always fun.
That's what life's all about.
Yeah. So the last couple of years, especially as things have started to heat up, I'm hanging on by my fingernails, but there's a real pleasure when you're able to bring a product like Singani out and have people try it and like it. It's fun to expose people to something new, and this this is what I call sort of beginning of act two. Mm-hmm. We sort of launched in New York and LA, and we're just moving into San Francisco, but now, you know, we got to get serious.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the product, actually. I mean, Singani 63 is the product. Singani is the style, correct?
Yeah, it's a, to be called Singani, you need to have used the white muscat grape of Alexandria exclusively. It needs to have been grown and distilled in this one 20,000 acre area in Bolivia, which is very, very high up, almost a mile high. And so if you don't meet these criteria, you can't call it Singani. I was exposed to it at the startup party for Che in 2007. Our Bolivian casting director gave me a bottle of it as a gift, and he said, this is the national drink of Bolivia. And I said, how do you drink it? And he goes, well, I just drink it on ice. And I had two, and found him and grabbed him by the lapels. And I said, what is this? Like, really, what is this? I've never tasted anything like it. Tell me more. Tell me more about it. So as it turns out, it's got a nearly 500-year history in Bolivia, but they don't export it at all. So we all got hooked on it during the shoot, the camera department especially. And by the end of the shoot, I was being encouraged to bring it to the U.S. And naively, I thought, why not? I literally thought it was just something you apply, and they say yes, and you can bring it in. So, of course, that process took almost 6 years to get it. To get it landed here in New Jersey took almost 6 years.
They really tried to make it as hard as possible for you to have any kind of fun, right?
Well, it was a weird process. I mean, it not only took a long time, you'd have these periodic phone calls. They'd want to get you on the phone, ask you a few questions, Mm-hmm. And then they'd say, thanks. You wouldn't hear anything for months and months. They'd schedule another phone call. They'd ask you some more questions. It was a really weird sequence of events.
What were these kinds of questions? Were they background checks?
Yeah, they kind of were. They wanted to know why I was doing this and what my intentions were. And was I fronting for somebody, or was I really doing this on my own? It was the slow version of TSA pre.
Right.
And but eventually it worked out. One of the things that we've been dealing with that again, at the time I didn't understand the significance of, was the Tax and Tariff Bureau categorized us as a brandy. Now, at the time, I didn't understand why or what that meant. All I knew, I was happy that at least we were not in a category in which we're competing head-to-head with billion-dollar companies.
Yeah.
But as time went on, I realized, like, this isn't really... As I started to educate myself about the categories and about spirits in general, I really felt this isn't accurate, actually. And we petitioned at the end of last year for the TTB to give us our own category. That's rare, but it's not unheard of. And I feel like we made a very good presentation. We did spectral analysis and all this stuff. And we said, like, this is not brandy. This is its own thing. Because people, you spend a lot of time describing what it isn't to people as opposed to what it is. But the good news was, just good luck for me, I stumbled upon something that nobody'd really heard of here or been exposed to here, and yet had this long history. So we kind of got the best of both, because people were excited when you go to talk to mixologists. They're like, this is fascinating. I've never heard of it.
We always want the weird stuff that you've never seen before.
Yeah.
And we want it before everyone else gets it, too.
Well, exactly. And so you got that, and you got this great history behind it, too. So
absolutely.
I was lucky in that regard. I was lucky, as we were talking about before the show, this length of time dealing with the government. During that 6 years, so much changed in cocktail culture. Mm-hmm. Like the whole idea of mixology kind of exploded. And I think we'd be in a much different position now if we had tried to bring this out in 2008.
Sure.
I think it'd have been a lot harder.
Yeah. I mean, especially being... It's funny to me because I often say on this show that we're living in like the most exciting time for cocktails and spirits and food and everything, and it's true. I feel like a broken record sometimes though when I say that, but it is, because as each year passes, the need and the desire for more information and for more unique ingredients grows and grows and grows. And I mean, tomorrow's always like the best day to launch something, but yeah, I mean, like you're totally right. I feel like in 2008, we were all kind of playing catch up a lot. As far as like classic cocktails and ingredients go, everyone was kind of like culturally kind of like reteaching themselves something that had been lost, you know, from the onset of Prohibition through the 20th century. And finally get to a point where it's the time to bring in these ingredients, you know, especially I think people are much more educated on everything.
Oh, yeah.
People want to know. I mean, even like with the financial just kind of gnarliness of the late 2000s, people not necessarily, it was more about quality over quantity. So there was definitely a few years there where people were like, all right, well, I'm not going to go out and have three drinks. I'm going to go out and have one drink, but it's going to be really fucking good.
Right.
You know? So I think that's definitely a pro on your side, you know?
No, I mean, when I was growing up, it was sort of the equivalent of three television networks. Like when I grew up and started drinking, there weren't a lot of options. There were sort of handful of staple drinks that you either were into or you weren't.
Alabama Slammer.
Yeah. And it's for the consumer, this is an amazing time. The variety of spirits that are available and the general knowledge level of a bartender now is so much higher than it was 10 years ago. Now, when you're on my side of it, this becomes really tricky because the competition is so fierce. I look at a bar now completely differently than I did when I started this process. I walk in and immediately I'm starting to clock how they've set the bar up, where they're placing the bottles. I'm thinking now about how bottles look and how easy is that to pour. And, oh, that's not a good design because you can't get a spout in it. You know, things that bartenders think about that I never used to think about at all.
If you put it in a rectangular bottle, they're going to turn it sideways and you're not going to be able to see the label because it's going to fit better between two bottles.
Exactly.
It's going to take up less shelf space. Which is why they do that, you know, to put it like in liquor stores, it has a better shelf presence. But then in bars, you kind of shoot yourself in the foot. Yeah, it's like all these things, man. You're totally right. And I think it's really interesting because, like, I think that definitely happened to me when I decided to get into the bar world. You know, it's like, it's kind of this crazy thing where you start, I think it'd probably be the equivalent of like when you're shooting a film, like if I visit your set and saw like what's going on, you know, like the production of it, you just like, it's an industry.
You wouldn't look at a movie the same way.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So before you found Singani, you were a big vodka drinker, right?
Yeah.
And you would drink it like on the rocks mostly.
Martinis. Yeah, very simple. Yeah, maybe soda if I was knowing it was going to be a long night, I'd try and pace myself a little bit.
And stretch it out a little bit.
Yeah, that was kind of my go-to, and that's why this really hit me the right way, because it's
super clean.
It's more flavorful,
obviously, than vodka.
Yeah.
But it is super clean and crisp. I got to try some... just a couple of weeks ago at my bar, and like you said before, it's like explaining to people what it isn't rather than what it is, you know, because like my immediate thought was like, oh, it's like a pisco, you know. And I took the bottle behind the bar and started playing around with it,
right.
And I was like, wait a minute, it's kind of like a pisco, but it's kind of like an eau de vie. What? Okay. And I was just like, oh man, I have to rethink my process on like how, like when I get introduced to a new spirit,
right.
I have to completely like recalibrate my thoughts on it and what it is or what it isn't, rather, you know, and just take it and break it down on the palate and then start thinking about like what my palate and my brain and my soul are telling me what to do with this spirit, you know, and then start going in these different directions rather than just throwing it into a pisco sour.
Right.
Or, you know, I whipped up a 50-50 martini with it. And even then I was like, oh man, I didn't want to kill your sales rep's bottle because he had one bottle with him. Right. But I was like, oh man, I want to keep playing around with this. And I was like, I think if I use this different vermouth, I did one with sherry. Which works fabulously and it was just really cool. You know, they're like I said, you know, like we've been saying before, it's like just really exciting, you know, to have a new product. And I really think that, like, from your side of it and how this has all happened extremely organically is really cool. It's exciting for me to hear your story about this because, I mean, I always say, like, on this radio show that all my guests, you know, it's like, it's basically like we're just talking shop and we're at my bar.
Right.
But we just happen to have microphones in front of us. And there's like, you know, a billion of people listening. But it's exciting to me to see like in like real time, like what's happening with cocktail culture and spirits culture and food culture. Like just right now, you know, you tell me about this and it makes me just as excited to talk to you about this here as if you were at my bar and I was showing you a cocktail. And to have that, especially when it was a connection with like someone you were working with that gave you this awesome rare thing that you had no idea what it was, and then you took it and ran with it, and it's just it's inspiring, you know.
Well, we're trying to keep the voice of it specific, you know. I write all the copy for anything that we create. The design of the website, I think, is really fun and distinctive. We're trying to have it feel personal and have it feel sort of hand hewn. When we were shooting the Liberace movie, I made a point of having lunch with Dan Aykroyd one day because I wanted to pick his brain about Crystal Head and his whole experience with that. And the one thing he said to me was, if you're not willing to show up, then don't do it.
Yeah.
He goes, you've got to show up. Like, you need to, like, you got to be the face of this thing. He goes, if you're not interested in doing that and traveling and going to events like Tales of the Cocktail in sure. 2 weeks, he's like, don't do it. And so I really took that to heart, you know, that it's got to feel personal.
Yeah, man. If you're not willing to sweep the floor, you're going to get dirt on your feet, man. It's not going to be good. You know, I mean, those things, like, I guess, you know, there are a lot of people. Not a lot. No, there's like a handful of folks out there that are like yourself, kind of like on the celebrity side of the world that are getting into the spirits market and industry. And it's definitely like you're saying, you know, there's definitely like work involved with it, but it's not really necessarily trying to be profitable from it or like making a quick buck, because like you mentioned, Dan Aykroyd's doing Crystal Skull Vodka. He loves it, you know, like you said. Clooney's got Casamigos. I think, is Timberlake still doing his tequila?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of people behind, you know, a lot of these brands. But, like, no one's really trying to, like, and of course, like, P. Diddy's probably trying to make a lot of money off of Ciroc. But there are...
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get into this to get bought out.
Oh, yeah.
I got into it to get it... So that people could,
so you could have, get you can
it.
Enjoy it, yeah.
And hopefully at some point it becomes sustainable. That's all I want. I don't want it to continue to be a sort of money drain. But it's like a startup. I mean, it's a startup.
Yeah.
You know, and the burn rate initially is high for what you're getting back. But it's you have to be patient. And I keep saying to everybody, I'd rather this happen right than have it happen soon.
Yeah.
Like, I want it to happen the right way.
Do you want it done right, or do you want it done right now?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's got to feel... People have very... You know, their radar for stuff that's kind of fake is pretty sharp. And so I want to make sure, like I said, that the voice of it is specific and sounds genuine.
Well, yeah, like you were saying before with the design of the bottle and everything, it's like you've got... The packaging is really, like, honest and earnest, and... I mean, to me, it's something like also like I'm pretty critical of like packaging because I'm ex graphic designer
right.
before I got into the bar world, which is a better lifestyle being a bar person than
really?
A graphic designer, I think. although my brother still does it, and he's doing great, but I do like the packaging of it. It's like, I read an interview with you, and you were saying that, like, for a Bolivian spirit, it's not, like, the idea of, like, flashy packaging is not something that exists in Bolivia. And so it needs to fit the style and the actual, like, way of
yeah,
living life.
This is not a luxury item in Bolivia. This is an everyman's drink. And that's why I wanted something that was, you know, nice graphically, but simple, unpretentious.
Well, the label's really clean and the spirit's really clean too.
Yeah.
So it totally matches. I think it's really cool. I've been really enjoying playing around with it. You know what? We would probably be drinking some today, but you've got to move later. So
yeah, I know.
But let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll continue speaking with Steven Soderbergh of Singani 63.
And today's break song is called "Meeting at the Docks" by Rectech. This is the Speakeasy. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
And we are back. You are listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. And in the studio today, we've been talking about Singani 63 with Steven Soderbergh. And it's a really cool story. To me, we were talking a little bit about this before the show and during the break. Just having, like, a story behind something. Your life is built of just a collection of stories, man.
Yeah.
You know? And for me, you know, like, certain spirits, like, you know, like Chartreuse or Fernet Branca, you know, they have, like, insane stories, you know? And the story really sells the spirit a lot of times, you know? Especially with something like Chartreuse. Or Benedictine, or, like, you know, whatever. So I really appreciate that with Singani. You know, just tying something together with your two professions here. I was at a preview last week of the new Amy Schumer movie called Trainwreck, and I definitely noticed in one scene there were there were two camera angles going to two parts of her apartment, and there was like a half drunk bottle of Maker's Mark 46 on like her kitchen counter, and then there was one like on her nightstand. I didn't know if that was like just kind of like a mistake that was made in the set design or whatever, but I was like, oh, my first thought was before, like, maybe there was a mistake in the shoot. I was like, oh, so Maker's Mark got a product placement.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, and it's funny too. I mean, like, even I watched the show Community. It's so silly and funny. And there was one episode where they did this, like, spaceship ride thing that was sponsored by KFC. I'm like, oh, so KFC totally got a huge product placement there. But it's fascinating to me seeing, like, product placements. I think that's probably what got, like, definitely. Yeah, I remember, like, I was looking at a guitar magazine, like, when I was, like, probably 8 years old. And this is like the late 80s, and, you know, Guns N' Roses is in there, and Slash has a bottle of Jack Daniels. It worked on me,
oh,
man.
Oh, yeah, sure. No, it's, look, it's a funny thing, and it comes to this, back to this idea of being sort of trying to be organic, because that was something, obviously, I was thinking about early on, and, you know, is there a way to get Singani in anything?
In, like, Magic Mike, or...
Well, yeah, so what we ended up doing... Well, one funny thing happened was I got a call from David Fincher when he was shooting Gone Girl. He's like, will you send me 5 bottles of Singani? Sure. He was in Kansas City. And a couple days later, he sent me a frame grab of Ben Affleck sitting at his kitchen table with a bottle of Singani in front of him. I thought, oh, that's a nice thing for a friend to do. It's this long scene where there's nothing else in the kitchen except this bottle of Singani. And then when Magic Mike came along, it's in there, but it's pretty, you got to look for it.
Sure.
Because I felt that would be gross. Like, you can't have this be too obvious, or it's just kind of gross. But what I'm hoping to do is that I put the word out that sometimes, you know, when you're making a movie and you're trying to get product placement, or if you're a filmmaker, you want people using real products. You always feel stupid when you have to make something up that doesn't exist. It just somehow, like, makes the universe tilt the wrong way.
Yeah.
So, but often, you know, when you try to get a product, but you have a character that's really unsavory, the company will just go, we don't want to be associated with that. Well, I don't care.
Yeah.
I want to be the product that you go to when nobody else dares have that character hold up their brand.
Right.
I want to be that brand.
Right. You don't want to, I'm sure no liquor brand really wanted to have a product placement in like Barfly.
No, exactly. You know? But so yeah, I'm just putting the word out. Like, we don't care.
Yeah. yeah, it's always fascinating to me to see how that. Well, and you know, like, you make a good point of that. Like, if it's an unsavory character, I think that's like, how do you go about, like, how do you turn the table on that, like, with a product placement? Like, if you're really going for it, do you just kind of like rewrite that scene a little bit, or
usually what you end up doing, like I said, is you end up having to create something that doesn't exist.
Jake Danielson.
Yeah, exactly. So, I remember on a movie once we couldn't even get, we were shooting at a gas station and we couldn't even get at the time for whatever reason, we couldn't even get like a real gas station to let us show
their brand.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we ended up like creating this name for a gas station because we couldn't get Chevron to let us show it as Chevron. And there was nothing happened. There was nothing terrible happened. It's just a guy waiting in a car.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you get into these corporate things. On Magic Mike XXL, we were trying to shoot a hardware store. So we, just a guy walked, Joe Manganiello walking into a hardware store. So we went and we shot Ace Hardware. Comes back. You know, Warner Brothers legal calls us like they don't want to be in the movie. I'm like, really?
Wow.
They don't want Joe Manganiello like walking into their store. So we had to call it Max Hardware, you know, because somebody in corporate went, we don't want to be associated with Magic Mike.
Weird.
Yeah.
So weird.
So strange.
Huh. Well,
Radio Shack, this is why they're out of business. They said yes. So we have a Radio Shack scene.
Oh my God, that's funny. Yeah, like, I think it's funny. It's like, there's so many weird ins and outs, right?
Well, I mean, I don't know how much you run into this. I mean, I'm in a business in which dealing with lawyers is, you know, a large part of your day, which can be really frustrating.
Yeah,
I don't know how much interaction you have with like legal issues here.
I live in Brooklyn. We, you know, we do it the Brooklyn way.
Okay.
No lawyers.
Exactly.
We take care of it. sorry. I'm probably going to get in trouble with legal on that one.
Yeah.
hey, let's talk about something. Let's switch gears a little bit. So what was, I like to ask some of these like more fun, personal questions about so you were a big martini drinker and a big vodka soda drinker. What was the worst drink you've ever had? What was the worst drinking experience you ever had?
Well,
or are there too many to list?
Yeah, there are a lot. What's interesting to me is that, and somebody asked me that, I was talking about this the other day. It's shocking the variance in a dirty martini. If you ask somebody to make you a dirty martini, it's shocking how wide, you know, the quality of this drink can be bartender to bartender. It's really weird. Like some people will really nail it. Some people, I mean, you can get a bad one and it's just undrinkable.
Sure.
I mean, I still drink it, but it's you know, under duress. That's really weird to me. You'd think that's a fairly simple thing to do, but it's really not.
Yeah. Like, do you make martinis for yourself at home?
Oh God, no.
No?
No.
You don't want to touch it?
No. I probably should. I should try.
Do you like yours on the dirtier side or just like a little hint of dirt?
Yeah, not too dirty, but
But you want it to be there.
I want a little bit of that salty.
The brininess.
Yeah. Yeah. I want that right, you know. But it's so weird. But you'll see, sometimes, I mean, you'll see them and they won't like mix it. I actually saw a guy like pour juice like into the
martini after it was already made?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not cool, man.
No, you can't do, I literally would say you can't do that.
Are you a fancy olive person? Do you like any kind of like
stuffed
olives?
No, I really don't. I like it pretty straightforward. I usually just get one olive. I don't go for the three.
You go for one?
Yeah.
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 I like that too. I always put two in martinis because I know it's against the rules, but I'm a Gemini and a twin. So, oh, wow. So I do too a lot of times.
Yeah.
I've had to change my game a little bit. But when I used to drink martinis a lot, vodka martinis in Oklahoma City, I would go to this one place and they would make my vodka martinis for me. And I just wanted like a little bit of dirt. And, you know, it was a bar spoon. They would just while they were scooping out the olives to put them in the glass. I'm not a big skewer person. I like the olives to, like, hang out and marinate glass, you know? Yeah. So I just want two olives, and just whenever you scoop it out of the thing, just, like, make sure that there's a little bit of juice in there. So, and that always worked out for me.
Right.
And then I ended up going to gin martinis, and then I was 21. that's actually not too far off.
See, when I was growing up in Louisiana, it was 18 to drink when you were 18.
Oh, right. So, yeah.
So, which meant 14.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's amazing.
Yeah. That's not coming back.
That's not going to come back. They just banned smoking in Louisiana. So, Tales of the Cocktail this year is going to be...
Wow. Indoors?
Indoors, that's
right. Wow. Okay. That is going to be interesting.
It's going to be a different
type
of Tales
of the Cocktail. I'm surprised. That surprises me.
I mean, the bars are still open 24 hours.
Yeah.
But. Speaking of, are you going to Tales of the Cocktail?
Yeah, I am. We're doing a little, we're doing an event there. It's going to be fun. We're going to have four mixologists from different parts of the country doing a little sort of mix-off.
Cool.
And it's going to be fun.
Great. Yeah, I'm going to be down there as well. We'll have to link up and...
All right, I'll give you the deets.
Cool.
Yeah.
I love deets. Yeah, cool. I think we were talking a little bit before the show about the heat, so make sure you bring some shorts.
And I can't. You don't want to see me in shorts. Nobody gets to see that.
That's me too. I'll suffer.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm looking forward to it. Actually, I haven't been to New Orleans in a while. I'm usually there a couple times a year.
Well,
I'm from Baton Rouge, and a buddy of mine has a mixing stage down there. So typically I'm mixing sound there, but on the Nick we've been mixing in New York.
Cool.
But it's going to be a good time.
Have you been down there before?
Not to Tales, no.
Oh.
No.
Here's my advice.
Okay.
Every time you see water, drink it.
Yeah.
And never finish a cocktail.
Okay. Well, you know, I know what I'm going to be drinking.
Well, yeah, exactly. So, well, that's... Well,
I'm the Tony Montana of the spirit world. I'm definitely hitting my own supply. As a matter of fact...
I'm not saying don't have multiples... I'm saying never finish one.
Oh, okay.
Because it's a mental thing.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, as long as you don't finish your drink, like, you know, put maybe just that last sip, just leave it, and then get yourself another one.
Right.
Get a freshie, and also, you know, go to Kushan and, you know, a place like that.
Yeah.
Maybe keep it easy on the Acme charbroiled oysters, you know, because those will catch up with you, but. It is a very good time.
Well, when I go down there to mix audio, there's a place called Mother's.
Right. Oh, I love Mother's.
Yeah. I mean, I could eat there three times a day.
Oh, man.
Literally.
I think I have.
It's so good.
I always go to like Willie Mae's Scotch House, get some fried chicken, and then go to Mother's. And then drink a bunch of Sazerac at the Montelio.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty good.
Yeah. Not a bad life.
No, it's not.
Well, cool. Steven, it's been great having you on the show today. We're unfortunately at the end of it, but I'm really glad that you made the time to come out here and talk to us about Singani 63. And it's a really cool product. I think to me, it's you're going to be seeing it in a lot of places. I mean, it's definitely going to be making its way onto a lot of cocktail menus. It's such a cool spirit, and you know, like I said before, it's like it doesn't fit into any real category, which is why you guys had to build that. And I've had a lot of fun playing with it, so I'll shoot you some recipes when I get them figured out.
Oh, great! Yeah, please do.
Cool, man.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, thanks a lot. And I'll see you down in New Orleans in a couple of weeks. All right, thanks a lot. You've been listening to The Speakeasy. Steven Soderbergh, thank you again for coming on the show. We're around every week, except for in a couple weeks when I'm in New Orleans, hanging out, drinking Singani 63 with Steven. That's it for this week. Please enjoy the weather, and we'll see you around. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter @heritage_radio.